hold on.
Nope.
It kind of makes you want to break into song.
You learn something every day on Grape Encounters Radio.
I love the mountains. I love the clear blue skies. I love big bridges. I love the great white spine.
I love the whole world.
And all its sights and sounds.
Boom-dee-ada, 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 boom-dee-ada.
Do you know what time it is?
No, what time it is?
Grape Encounters Radio. We're happy to explain anything you don't understand in plain English.
And it's time for your Grape Encounter. David Wilson here. And I'll tell you what, I couldn't be more excited about the guest that we're opening the show with today. And it's because he is one of those people who is responsible for me being able to drink really exceptional wines and not having to spend an arm and a leg to do that. On the phone is Alex Guarachi, and he's got a couple of things actually going on. He last year was named Importer of the Year by Wine Enthusiast Magazine, a very big deal. His company is TGIC Importers, and Alex was one of the very first people to bring wines in from South America. He now has the Guarachi family wines, which we're going to talk about as well. Alex, hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, appreciate it.
Well, first of all, it's still exciting. I know it's old news now. I think this story actually came out in October of last year when Wine Enthusiast called you Importer of the Year. But I don't know anybody that's more deserving. You've got wines coming in from all over the place now.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. It started with Chile, did it not?
It started many years ago after I graduated from college.
Yeah.
I came to the United States on a soccer scholarship last year, my senior year, playing for San Francisco State University. And we were ranked number one nation. We had the best record in the nation, and I was captain of the team. I was already talking to scouts. I was ready to play professional. I wanted to be the next Pelé.
Yeah.
and I got injured during the playoffs. And it was one of those injuries that it took forever to heal.
I hate when that happens, yeah.
So I was, you know, my soccer career was kind of over. And about a year or two afterwards, importing wines. And in those days, you could not find a bottle of Chilean wines anywhere.
But let me stop you right there. Yeah. You said you went from soccer to importing wines.
Right.
That's a quantum leap.
You get out of college, and you don't know what to do with your life.
Yes.
That's the way I felt. I like business, and I've always been an entrepreneur, and I be self-employed, and I grew up with wine on the table. My family is not in the wine business, but this could be a good opportunity to bring some Chilean wines to the U.S. and introduce them.
How important was wine in Chile? Was there a great deal of consumption going on when you were growing up, or has it caught on even more like it has in the U.S.?
It's a beverage that we drink at lunch and at dinner. It's part of our diet, and it's always been there. I think lately it's gone down because about 20 years ago, we just opened the barriers we opened the trade with other countries. So now we're getting other things like spirits and beers. And
yeah.
So I think maybe it lost a little of the momentum, but still wine is a big consumption. It's consumed at all levels in Chile.
Now, your company, TGIC Importers, is the gold standard when it comes to importing wines from South America. It's not just Chile anymore.
Right.
Let's just give listeners a rundown of all of the places that you bring wine in from.
Yeah, sure. Well, we started with Chilean, and then a few years later, I went to Argentina, and when Argentina was really in diapers. So
yeah.
I was very lucky and very fortunate to get involved with some amazing wineries. They're all family-owned, and they were amazing winemakers. Wineries such as Achaval Serret and Bodegas Norton and Pascual Toso and Kaiken. And so we work with, I've been very fortunate to work with some of the best winemakers, and we only work with family-owned wineries. They've had a long tradition of making great wines, and they own their own vineyards, so it's all state bottle. So that's kind of just been our motto. And then from there, I went to New Zealand, and I started bringing in New Zealand wines, and then Australia, and now we're working with a couple of wineries out of Spain. So, yeah, we've been growing slowly but surely. We don't have a lot of brands. We want to keep it small, but we want to keep it really good. We want to have brands that are, people say, every time they see the back label imported by TGIC,
yes,
they want to feel proud of it. They want to feel, you know what, I'm good with this wine. I know the importer takes this very serious.
Well, the thing about Chilean wines, and yes. I have said this probably 100 times on this show, because people often ask, what's a great wine for not too much money?
Right.
And the simple truth is that if you spend $10 to, let's say, $25 for, let's say, a Cabernet from California, you are rolling the dice. You may get a good bottle of wine, you may not. But if you spend that amount of money on a Chilean wine, chances are you've got a much better chance of getting a really quality bottle of wine, don't you?
I agree with the statement. I make wines now in Napa.
Yeah.
I love Napa Cabs and give me good Sonoma Pinot. I'm a happy camper. But the reality is that because it's more expensive to grow, labor is more expensive, and all of that here in California, especially in Napa and Sonoma, and in Chile, you can get better values out of South America, and you can get a great Cabernet at a good price from Chile, and you can get a great Malbec at a good price from Argentina.
It's labor and land that makes the difference, and I know it's night and day between Napa and Sonoma
right. And
South America, but isn't there a lot of intellectual capital coming from California and other winemaking regions
sure. That's
going over to South America now and putting their fingers in that pie?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got people like, for instance, from France, you got Lafite working in Chile, and you got Antonori as well. Paul Hobbs works with me in Argentina. He's been making wines in Argentina for a few years. He does do some consulting as well in Chile. So there is a huge influence of wineries or winemakers from around the world today in both Chile and Argentina.
Contrast for me the conditions, and I'm talking about climate growing conditions,
yes. In
Chile versus the Napa Valley,
yeah.
Because these wines are more similar than not in many respects. And I mean, and the quality is just amazing, as I said, with Chilean wines. And there are those varietals that we don't see too much here in this country. You know, for instance, Malbec are so popular
right. From
Chile, and they're so delicious. But are the growing conditions really similar?
Yeah, and there's a big difference between Chile and Argentina. But let me start with Chile.
Yeah.
Chile is just like California. Remember that we are basically on the other side of the equator. We're in the southern hemisphere, but it's the same climate, Mediterranean climate, that California has. If you look at latitude, just about the same latitude as Napa and Sonoma, but
yeah. In
the southern hemisphere. That being said, we, in some ways, we have the same conditions. The influence of the ocean, just like the influence of the ocean here in California. We have the influence of the mountain, the same here. So in the soil, you know, you got good soil or poor soil just about anywhere around the world. It depends. And we have the same conditions. So you have to have the Mediterranean climate, just like California does. And Chile has the same as California. So that's point number one. The other piece is, in so many ways, Chile grows very natural because we don't have phylloxera or Pierce disease or mold or it doesn't rain. So we don't use chemicals. So and that's, you know, we've never been affected by phylloxera, as you know.
Yes.
Europe and California being wiped out because of phylloxera. So we're still growing our vines in their own roots. Now, Argentina is a totally different story. Mendoza is basically the big wine country of Argentina, where 80% of the wines is produced there. But now here we have a continental climate influenced just by the Andes Mountains. So it's so different. And actually, Mendoza is the desert. It's a very dry desert. What happens there is the soil are so poor, and it's very gravelly and this and the other. That so the only way to grow, I mean, vines grow beautiful in poor soil conditions. The only thing you need is water. Where do you get the water? From the Andes Mountains.
Yeah, and the vines really, people don't really understand. They love to be deprived, don't they?
That's right. If you give them too much love or too much water, then you get huge canopies, a lot of leaves, and too much grape. Too many bunches of grapes.
I want you to hold that thought for a minute, too, because I want to come back to that.
Yeah.
And specifically as it relates to Malbec, because I at least have heard some interesting stories about the difference in growing conditions in South America versus France, where it came from. My guest is Alex Guarachi, who, of course, you got to know him. He's a legend now in wine imports, TGIC, which I think is, thank goodness or God, it's Chilean, right?
Yeah, that's how it started. But also my partner's last name was Trolley. My last name is Guarachi, and then importing company. So it stands for, the way it started, it stands for two things. Thank God it's Chilean, and also Trolley Guarachi Importing Company.
The best double entendre in the wine business. We'll continue with Grape Encounters Radio. I'm David Wilson. Grape Encounters Radio is proudly brought to you by EpicStyle.com. EpicStyle.com is your ultimate resource for wine, beer, and spirit accessories, gadgets, and gifts. Choose from thousands of items and visit EpicStyle.com often, because they offer new products just about as often as winemakers release new wine. EpicStyle.com.
Lots of wineries talk about growing great grapes. This winery talks about growing great wines. Sarlos & Sons in Los Olivos, California, grows great wine, period. This family winemaking operation doesn't have a traditional mission statement. They have a family creed. Live to honor those that come before us and prepare the way for those yet to come. It's with this sense of pride that Sarlos & Sons grows great wine. Grapes grown in the shadow of the farmer ensures the highest quality of grapes are used in Sarlos & Sons wines. Check them out at sarlosandsons.com and also be sure to check out their once-in-a-lifetime wines. Sarlos & Sons is a dream coming true, and they can help make your dreams come true with their exclusive once-in-a-lifetime wines, which commemorate those unrepeatable, unforgettable moments in your life. Learn more about this and more at sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com.
We are so fortunate on Grape Encounters Radio to have some incredible authors of books related to wine on the show. But there are two books that I really have a soft spot in my heart for. The first one is a book that just came out. It's called Yard Wine. It's a neighborly thing written by Nancy Roddy and Kathy Larson. Oh my gosh, if you want to know how to bring your neighborhood together using a bottle of wine and your front porch, then pick up a copy of Yard Wine. You'll find the link at grapeencounters.com. Now, another book that I've got a real soft spot for is Tom Silberkleit's California Directory of Fine Wineries. There is no better wine-related travel book than the California Directory of Fine Wineries. Absolutely spectacular photographs, great information. This book will make you salivate more than a great Cabernet Sauvignon. You'll find a link to Tom's book also on grapeencounters.com. Check out the reading material at grapeencounters.com. A pleasure to have on the line Alex Guarachi. You were among the first, if not the first, to bring wines in from South America. Now you do it in a very big way. Last year, they named you the 2010 Importer of the Year. I was talking at the very end of our last segment about the difference in growing conditions.
Sure.
And one of the things that I find fascinating is the Malbec grape, because it seems like it does a lot better in South America than it did in its native soil. Am I right?
That's right. Oh, absolutely right. Well, it doesn't, I think the problem in France, where it's always been used as a blending grape, it doesn't ripe as well. I mean, I think the grape itself, Malbec, loves Argentina, loves Mendoza, because of, one is the altitude. They love the altitude, and they love heat.
Yeah.
So I think that in Mendoza can get quite hot. So, and it's a thick skin, so Mendoza just has been the perfect spot.
So in France, it tended to be too leafy, right, which deprived the fruit, and there it's just the opposite.
Right.
I've got this theory about Malbec that, and it's because every time I open up a bottle of it and I serve it to guests, they go, wow, what's this? It's one of those wines that when it's served as a single varietal wine, people just go, wow, what is it? And I think this is going to be a much hotter wine than it already is.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. Like, people now are discovering that Malbec can be consumed like Cabernet or like Merlot or like Pinot Noir. In the old days, when I introduced Malbecs in the U.S. 20 years ago or so, people didn't know what Malbec was. And the people that didn't know that have some skills in the wine industry said, well, that's a blending grape. Why are you making 100% Malbec? I don't know if I like it. But of course, in those days, the quality wasn't as good as it is today.
But you see the same thing with Petit Verdot, too. You know, they put a little tiny bit in the Bordeaux blends. More and more, I'm starting to see bottles of single varietal Petit Verdot. So
yeah, some grapes do better than others. You know what I mean? And as you know, Sangiovese only grows great in Montalcino. You know what I mean? And doesn't grow well anywhere else in the world.
Let's talk about the Guarachi family wines, because you finally broke down and did it and decided to make your own wines and
yes.
get in there with the other winemakers. How's that going? I know you've been doing very well. I think your Pinot has really been topping the charts.
Yes, it's hot.
That's Sonoma County?
Single vineyard. The vineyard is called Gap's Crown. You know, look, when I started, this now is about 5 years ago or so, I wanted to make wine. I wanted to do, we've always done all the sales and marketing for other people in wineries.
Yeah.
I wanted to do something that has my name, had my family and my children's name, more personal, more fun. Because I know so many people in the industry, I thought, I don't need to have a winery to do this. I can buy the best fruit that I can possibly get. So I went to the best sources. And I said, I'm going to hire the best winemaker.
And you put Paul Hobbs to that task.
I got Paul Hobbs.
Wow.
So, and then we got the guy he works with, the guy by the name of Julian Gonzalez, and he's a great also winemaker and a great guy that managed my vineyard. So you got to have all those pieces in order to make great wines. And we're doing that, and so I'm having a lot of fun.
How about making wines in Chile?
I need to be there.
You need to be there.
It's difficult when you're 7,000 miles away.
All right, so you hired the best talent, but you're still not going to take your eyes off the ball.
No, I won't. I won't, because I do get together with Paul and Julian about 3-4 times a year. Taste, I blend with them. Nothing gets done until I say it's a go. Fight the fruit, and we make different wines. And also, we have different lots. We make some blends, and sometimes we're not too hard with one of the... Let's say, that, like, for instance, on our Cabernet, has a little bit of Cabernet Franc. And if that year is not perfect, we might classify that and we just only use Cabernet or make some of the blends. And now I'm making another single vineyard, Pinot Noir. We're always looking to get to do better. 2009 Cabernet, Guarachi family wine Cabernet, we declassified 2009 because it rained. I mean, we waited too long, I guess. Paul was not ready to harvest. What we did was... Obviously, by the time we harvested, I think we got like 3-4 inches of rain, and the quality of the wine wasn't there. I'm not going to put a wine in a bottle with my name unless the wines are fantastic.
Well, you know, I think that is great, because I think a lot of winemakers feel compelled that they have to have their 2007 Cabernet and 2008 and 2009, and they're creating these verticals. And I love the winemakers who say, you know what, we're going to make what's good for that year.
Yes.
And we'll blend it differently if we have to, or we won't serve it up at all. And especially when you're sourcing your grapes, you have the privilege to do that,
right,
where somebody who has estate-grown grapes may be somewhat stuck with what they've got on the property.
Yes. No, without a doubt. I mean, I still had to pay for the fruit, trust me. So the 2009, there were some losses. But you know what? I mean, we did not produce the 2009. We declassified. And what we did with the juice, instead of selling, we created another second label. We sold a Cabernet 2009, we sent it in 2009, at a good price, and it's an amazing wine.
Yeah.
But a half a price. We got to keep our integrity, and I think that's key in this business.
Are we ever going to see some blending of wines from, say, California and Chile?
I don't think it has ever happened. Some things have happened in the past where wineries that they were short of Jordan wine, they would go to Chile and they buy bulk. And they bought it here. And on their label, like, I don't know if you remember many years ago, Fetzer ran out of Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc, and they bought bulk in Chile, and they put on their label Central Valley Chile, Maipo Valley Chile,
yeah,
on their Fetzer Chardonnay or Sauvignon Blanc. So things like that has happened, but nobody has done a blend Cabernet or Carmenere from Chile and Cabernet or Cabernet Franc from Napa Valley.
I think you should be the first one to do it. Alex, I thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank
You're
you.
Just a wealth of information. We need to have you back very soon, because there's so much to talk. We just should just sit down and do a whole hour with you, because you've got so much to offer. People
thank
can
you.
Find the wines at Guarachi Family Wines, and that's spelled Guarachi FamilyWines.com, and go there. These are spectacular wines. Alex, thanks very much for being on Grape Encounters.
Thank you, David.
We'll have you back soon. More Grape Encounters coming just after this.
Tired of being caught unprepared? Want to be a good scout? That's what we thought. With Napkin by JNC Enterprises, you can be Johnny on the spot and be prepared for unexpected messes. The Napkin is one very clever product. These little beauties are barely the size of a small breath mint, but they come to life as a durable, convenient, and sturdy hand towel with just a few drops of water. You'll want to keep a supply of napkins everywhere you would keep a hand towel, paper towel, wash rag, or moist towelette. Napkin is all of these things in one very compact little tablet. Use it to wipe greasy hands, remove makeup, and even to entertain dinner guests. You never know when Napkin will come in handy. Get Napkin at NapkinJNC.com. It's completely eco-friendly and made of 100% recycled paper. Clean your environment and keep the environment clean with Napkin from NapkinJNC.com.
One of these days, I'm going to get in trouble for picking on pretentious people. Who knows, you know, I may go home one night, pull back the covers, and find a turned-up nose in my bed. Look, if you're a wine lover who really is put off by pretentiousness, if you want to discover more ways to have fun with fermented fruit, if you're always looking for new wine-related adventures and discoveries, then check out GrapeEncounters.com. GrapeEncounters.com has a huge library of audio adventures covering topics you're just not going to hear anyplace else. It's fun, fascinating, and it's free. Hey, there's something funny about this wine. So join us at the corner of fermented and demented. It's GrapeEncounters.com. Come on, give us a taste. When it comes to wine, it's the most fun that you can have without turning your feet purple. GrapeEncounters.com. Encounters is back with David Wilson, and now we're going to go from South America to the west coast of California, and we're going to talk to somebody that we haven't talked to in way too long, because it was the very first Grape Encounters broadcast that emanated from really what was the grand opening of his family's wine tasting room in Los Olivos, California. And I like to believe that there would be no Grape Encounters if it were not for the Sarlos family of Los Olivos. And on the line, one of our favorite buds, Keith Sarlos. Man, it's been a long time since we've had you on.
Hey, how are you doing?
You know, we talk about your wines every week because I like to plug them, because I have a personal relationship with Sarlos and Sons.
Yes, absolutely.
It's one of those places in my heart, soft spots, that will never go away, because you guys took such a chance on us when we were first getting started, and now here we are all over the country, and we have you to blame.
Well, it's very easy to spot a good thing.
Well, that's what I thought about your wines, and I, you know, kind of to just back up a little bit, we wandered into the tasting room. I think it was a couple of weeks before.
Yeah,
and it was just so different. It was an unusual place, unusual atmosphere, unusual wines, and unusual music, and more than anything, unusual people.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of that's by design. And one of the things that we as a family, we've been growing grapes for a long time. And
you were farmers before you were winemakers.
Absolutely, yeah. Still are, first and foremost.
Yes.
We sell our grapes to a lot of wineries and a lot of great wineries and, you know, well-received, big award kind of things. When I went wine tasting, I didn't understand where the, I'm not going to say pretense, but where, well, I'll say pretense. Pretense got injected, because wine, you know, is grown by dirtbags like us and outdoors in the ground.
Okay.
Winemakers are great people. They're artists. First and foremost, somewhere along the lines, you know, people hold a bottle in their hand and they put a lot of, I'm not, you know, I don't know if reverence is the right word, but it's kind of like people who listen to a lot of classical music, and then all of a sudden it has this very...
They ascribe a lot of importance to it and significance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what we wanted to do with who we are as a family and who we are as a wine company and growers was share wines the exact same way as you drink them at home with your friends. I mean, have a great time, great music. You're just kicking back and really enjoying the day.
Well, you know, the wine should be fun, but that's one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about today. Among other things is the fact that you're releasing some wines that, you know, really don't follow the norm. And I've noticed a lot of boutique winemakers are doing this, that, you know, the usual 8 or 9 most popular varietals are not where it ends anymore. And it seems that people are following your lead, that is wine drinkers, and are really experimenting with and discovering new wines, just as long as companies like yours, winemakers like yours, make them and put them out there.
I think that really goes back to when you say boutique wineries, I always think of the term indie wine, you know, independent wine.
Yeah.
You have indie movies, you have indie music. You know, those are, in all honesty, the artists, the people that have something to say, and their product, their art, their wine, or whatever they're doing needs to reflect that burning desire that they have in their gut, versus, you know, some of these huge blockbuster movies that, you know, it's gonna sell $1 billion in tickets, but, you know, really, where's the soul? That's what we're doing. You know, I think all of our wines should just simply be an expression of all of our hard work that we do out in the vineyard.
Well, you know, I think an interesting point here is that there's probably 50,000 wines that are available to
Americans
today.
Yeah, but they're made by 3 people.
Well, yes, but and my point was going to be that how many different Chardonnays can you have? How many different Cabernets can you have? I mean, isn't it a much broader palette that one should be painting? There's so many really cool varietals out there that haven't been discovered, and it seems like America is in the mood to discover these wines, and winemakers are in the mood to, you know, break the monotony and do something different.
You know, just like the radio exposes artists, you'll find, you know, the top 10 different artists, that's what plays on the radio. But when you start getting into music, or you start getting into wine, or you're building an appreciation for something you're experiencing, you start seeking out things that really speak to you. God bless those companies that make 3 different companies that make 50,000 different types of Chardonnay. People get into it, they taste it.
Yeah.
And just like with anything that you fall in love, you want to go to the next level of appreciation.
But it's hard for you to be mad at them because they because they certainly have gotten Americans in the wine drinking mood, and the
2-buck chuck is the best thing that ever happened.
Really? Did you really say that?
Absolutely.
Wow.
And I'll tell you very simply, because it made a wine that people can drink, and you can buy it for $2. You're opening it, you put the cork back in it, you throw it in your fridge, you treat it like garbage. And you know what? If there's some left over, you pour it down the drain. Who cares? There's no skin off your nose. But when, just like if somebody handed you a pawn shop guitar and you just started playing it and you played the crap out of it, then somebody hands you a slightly nicer guitar that some craftsmanship went into it, you understand or appreciate the difference between that piece of junk and something with craftsmanship. If you just walk in, somebody handed you a great guitar, you might play it, it's great, it's awesome, but your level of appreciation going from, you know, even your first car you ever owned to your second car to the car, you know, when you're 60 years old that does everything perfectly and it is a fine automobile, you have developed appreciation by sitting in those things. 2-buck chuck is a starting point. You drink it, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, hey, it was really cheap and easy for me to get into this club, if you will. And now, hey, I like cabs. I like this. And you start finding the things you do like, and then you start seeking craftsmanship. That's what everyone does. And God bless 2-buck chuck.
I'm talking to one of our very best buddies. It's Keith Sarlos of Sarlos & Sons. And by the way, I want to spell it. It's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S. Yes, they got more than their fair share of vowels. It's Sarlos & Sons. And you can go to sarlosandsons.com. And from day one, we called you Keith the philosopher, the wine philosopher. And some things haven't changed, except you've gotten more intense. Do you sit on top of a mountain now, and do people come up and seek your wisdom?
No, I just sit in a vineyard and bleed.
Never thought it was going to be this hard, did you?
It's a vocation. By doing it, I get to, you know, our wines express what we're doing out in the vineyard. We get to meet people face-to-face that appreciate what we're doing. To be honest with you, I'm very happy I found this at, you know, the ripe old age of 30. Now, in the last 5 years and the rest of my life, I have a purpose.
You'll never leave the wine business?
Never. I'll never leave where I live.
Wow. That's a lot of certainty coming out of your mouth.
That is 100%.
Certain. Let's go back to Two Buck Chuck for a second,
sure.
Because I appreciate your perspective on this, but I would offer an alternative perspective, which is when somebody is a newbie when it comes to wine drinking,
sure.
And they open up a
which
bottle.
Which we all were.
Well, when they open up a bottle of wine and it doesn't taste good to them, mm-hmm. Some people's reaction is going to be, okay, I've tried wine. I'm not going any further. And I see that, and you see that all the time. When they go, I don't like red wine because I had red wine, and red wine is terrible.
Well, that's also like saying you turned on the radio, you heard rap, and then you said, I don't like music.
Well, yeah.
Very short-sighted.
Okay. It is short-sighted, but, you know, a lot of people are short-sighted.
Well, yeah. And the truth of that is those kind of people will never really, quote-unquote, be into wine.
How many people have come into your tasting room and you start to offer them a Cabernet, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and they say, oh, I had Cabernet and I don't like it? Because they can think all wines are exactly the same.
Well, that's a big reason we do what we do, David, because one of the things we do is explain and say, well, it's not going to kill you. Taste it. Because maybe you had a bad experience. Maybe the people you were drinking it with were terrible. It's always so contextual.
Yeah.
And we pour them a nice glass of, you know, of grapes we grew and good crafted wine. And they take a sip of it and they go, oh, I like this. And usually we, 9 times out of 10, we tell you what you're tasting after you tasted it.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, you know, I would say prejudice is the right word because you've prejudged it. And they go, you know, usually I don't like that, but I like this.
Yeah. We
go, oh, great, welcome to the party. That's why we don't sell our wines anywhere but here. You have to have tasted it to buy it.
Well, you mean I can't just get online and buy it without tasting it? Because I've been telling people to do that for years.
You know,
just buy it, my recommendation. That's
well, the absolutely. If you know, everybody who's listening to you is listening to you for a reason. If you're endorsing it or you're vouching for us, you know, so to speak, I'm happy to sell you a bottle of wine, but when people come in, and 99.9% of what we sell is over the bar at our tasting room, and when they taste it and they enjoy it, they're allowed to buy as much as they want.
All right. So listen, just before you on the show, we had Alex Guarachi, who is he was named the importer of the year, but one of the first to bring wines in from South America. And one of the things that we talked about was Malbecs.
Sure.
And the fact that you're seeing more and more and more of them. It used to just be a blending grape. Nobody was very enthusiastic about this wine, and it's getting pretty hot right now. What are some of the things in your area and in your portfolio that are really different than what you would normally expect to see in a wine tasting room?
Oh, awesome.
All right, let's talk about those things.
One of the things that we do that I'm pretty excited about is we do a 100% Petite Syrah. Not a lot of people have had that. Usually people consider that a blending wine, but I think, you know, if we use the musical metaphor, I believe that Petite Syrah needs its own song. You know, it's kind of the George Harrison of wine.
Okay.
A second wine that we're really proud of, and we planted a lot of it, is Grenache Blanc. And Grenache Blanc is such a beautiful grape because, you know, Chardonnay is that girl in high school that wears too much makeup and is popular and you don't really know why. And Grenache Blanc is her cousin, who is absolutely beautiful, drop-dead gorgeous, and is very natural. And Grenache Blanc is the fourth largest planted grape in the Rhone region, but there's only 266 total acres planted in California. And we grow about 3% of that, yet less than 1% of the tonnage. And Grenache Blanc is I love introducing it to people because it will become their favorite varietal.
Well, and you're also offering up a straight red Grenache as well, right?
Absolutely.
And that's a wonderful wine, yeah.
And Grenache Blanc is, in a funny way, is one little thing, and that is a transmorphic gene. And all grapes start out green, and then they go through something called veraison. They turn from green to red. Grenache Blanc stays green. So genetically, it's very much a red grape. It's rich and flavorful, but it lacks that pigmentation or that tannic acid that you get with a lot of red wines, And that's really the difference.
A red grape locked in a green grape's body.
Absolutely. Actually, wow. Yeah, a better way to put it, you know, it's kind of the boy versus the girl. You know, we have a, there's one chromosome that separates boys versus girls in development.
Yeah. Hey, we love you, Keith Sarlos and Sarlos and Sons. Go to sarlosandsons.com. I endorse them because I love them and for no other reason. I love Sarlos and Sons, and go there and be with these people if you get a chance up in Los Olivos, California. And, you know, I don't care where you are in these United States listening to this show, you can buy this wine sight untasted, if that makes any sense, on my recommendation. And if you don't like it, I'll buy it back from you.
If you don't like it, send me an email. Tell me why. I'll replace it.
Hey, thanks, Keith. I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Talk to you soon.
Coming up next, it's the Gadget Guru, and we're going to be talking about Father's Day and some ideas for you and really wine and dad and maybe even beer and spirits and dad when we return with Grape Encounters Radio. You know, for most people, wine is more than just a beverage. It's a lifestyle, motivating enthusiasts to decorate in wine themes, collect the latest gadgets, and coordinate the table setting with wine glasses and accessories that celebrate the season or occasion. It's no wonder that epicstyle.com is the hottest spot on the internet to shop for wine lifestyle products. Nothing compares to epicstyle.com's selection of clever, functional, fun, and beautiful products for wine lovers. epicstyle.com.
This is the time of year when wine lovers start planning their pilgrimage to California's wine regions. The perfect inspiration and companion is the California Directory of Fine Wineries. Featured are profiles of dozens of Central Coast and Northern California wineries, along with hundreds of color images by renowned photographer Robert Holmes. Plus, highlights of tours, tastings, maps, and events. These beautiful directories make a fantastic gift. Be sure to like the California Directory of Fine Wineries Facebook fan page for wine country news and events each week. Click on the link at grapeencountersradio.com.
From time to time, you hear stories about everyday average people who, while cleaning the garage, come upon a painting that nobody liked. And what do you know? It turns out to be a Picasso. I wonder what it would be like to stumble upon a bottle of wine tucked away in a dark corner of your grandparents' pantry that was given to their parents as a wedding present. Rare wines can be very valuable indeed, and every bottle has an amazing story behind it. If you'd like to get up close and personal with some of the rarest wines on the planet, or better yet, if you'd like to take a stab at buying a bottle or two to treasure or even savor on some extraordinary special occasion, then you need to make your way to the St. Mark's 3rd Annual Cellar Classic, an auction of rare and fine wines on Saturday, July 28th in Los Olivos, California. You absolutely have to be there. July 28th in Los Olivos, California. For more information, click on the link at grapeencounters.com.
So did the scientists put the gadgets in him when he was a baby? Or was he born that way?
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is this.
I want to tell you about a safe new revolutionary
gadget lasso,
product.
Gadget magnet, gadget binoculars, gadget laser, gadget ski, gadget blow dryer, gadget flashlight.
I cannot imagine a better product today.
I have never seen a man work so hard and look busy.
No matter what happens, you've got to stay close to Uncle Gadget.
Go, go, Gadget Oil.
Well, I can't wait to have this conversation. It's David Wilson, Grape Encounters Radio, and now joining me, one of my favorite people on planet Earth, Matt Dubow of epicstyle.com, better known as the Gadget Guru. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Matt, Father's Day is coming up on Sunday, June 17th, and I wanted to talk about dads and wine, spirits, and beer.
Okay. Great.
Are you good with that?
I
was just thinking about, you know, my growing up and what kind of a dad my dad was. Was he a wine dad, a beer dad, or a spirit dad? And actually, he was all three.
Oh, really?
Yes, he was all three. I think he went through phases. Uh-huh. I think he started off as a beer dad, and then he became a spirit dad, and then he became a wine dad. The question is, which ones are more fun?
I think the ones that are combos.
Seriously?
Yeah. They can move and adjust whatever the occasion is.
Do you think that when a dad drinks all three that he's just a more well-rounded, textured person?
I don't know if he's more well-rounded.
Or an alcoholic.
I don't want to say alcoholic, but let me just say that person probably has a lot of fun.
You sell products that are for wine lovers, beer lovers, and spirit lovers. Are there people that buy, you know, they put in the order and they buy products for all three?
Oh, yeah.
That does happen. I mean, they're not just buying wine stuff or beer stuff. There are crossovers.
You know, there are definitely the traditional wine drinkers that all they buy are wine type of accessories. But I always know that somebody who is more of a spirit or a beer, they'll order everything. And those orders are usually a little larger. They're getting wine glasses and corkscrews and flasks and you name it, they're ordering it.
You're saying that if your primary drink is spirit or beer, that is where you'll find the broadest range of tastes.
I think so. Just from my experience, I think that those people are willing to try other cocktails and go into wine and be a little bit more adventurous.
Okay, so here's a little quiz. Let's go back to Father's Day for a second, okay?
Okay.
So let's talk about different kinds of fathers.
Okay.
If your father wants you to play in team sports, what does he normally drink?
You would think beer.
But then I'm thinking after the game, he drinks hard liquor, especially if you lose, right?
Now, that wasn't my experience.
No.
But I have heard stories.
What if dad wants you to go to an Ivy League school?
Oh, I'm thinking wine or a cognac.
See, I'm thinking he could really be a scotch drinker, too.
Most definitely. Maybe even a vodka tonic.
What if your dad just plain doesn't care? You know, it's like, well, you can just do whatever you want to do. What is he likely to drink?
Jack.
Just go away and hand me that bottle. Tell your mother to get dinner on the table.
Again, these are just my opinions.
Well, they're good they're good opinions for sure. You know, so let's talk about dads by profession. Just we'll pick a few professions here. If dad is an engineer, what does he probably drink?
Knowing engineers, and I'm sure you know a few, they're very detail-oriented, and I would think that they would be wine connoisseurs and very interested in the composition of the wine.
Okay.
Because they're so detail-oriented.
Yes.
Most of the engineers I know.
They're going to read the reviews, and they're going to look at wine characteristics and things like that and take that very seriously.
Well, what do you think an engineer would drink?
I was thinking that, but then I was also thinking maybe like a single malt scotch, something like that. Not a margarita, that's for sure.
No.
But I don't know. I'm going to take a lot of flack for this segment. I can tell you that. I can tell you that for sure. What if dad's a truck driver?
Again, I'm thinking beer and Jack Daniels.
What if dad's conservative?
Okay.
Is it beer or wine? Is it spirits?
Now, my dad was very conservative. He was a big port guy. He drank a lot of port.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. You know what's really interesting, though, is the assumption has always been that the beer drinkers are liberal and the wine drinkers are conservative. But the actual truth is that more money is donated to conservatives by the beer industry and more money is donated to liberals, that is candidates, by the wine industry. Isn't that interesting?
It is, but I can see that. I can see that, especially since a lot of the wineries in California, in Northern California, which is very liberal.
Well, hey, a couple of gifts that I saw online, you have a tab, and rather than going into everything, you have a Father's Day tab, and you've got some really cool things there. You've got a three-tier glass rimmer, which I guess that puts the salt or sugar or whatever on the rim of the glass, right?
Right.
Yeah, I love that. I'll tell you what else I love. I love, and I mean with a capital L, that zinc alloy ice crusher.
Oh, that is so much fun.
Oh my gosh, that is a beauty. And then you've got this lemon and lime juicer that is, it actually looks almost like a musical instrument. I love that.
I like the way you say that.
No, I do. It's just beautiful stuff. What I wonder about is the beer wheel. I've heard of a cheese wheel, but not a beer wheel. What's that?
Well, there's many different types of beer, just like with wine. And we are definitely seeing the beer craze increase. And there's a lot of different microbrews. And I don't want to say it's getting to be, you know, just like wineries where there's quite a few different wineries where you can go tasting. But I definitely see a lot of more crafted beers these days.
I actually went last night to a food and beer pairing, and it was all craft beers. I got to tell you what, you know how I don't like to talk about beer on Grape Encounters, but
right.
There were some humdingers there.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, beer is, watch out for beer because beer is here.
It definitely is. I'm seeing it. A lot of our customers are seeing it. on the liquor side where they are really increasing their beer accessory orders.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something. Well, Matt, you know what? There's lots of things, lots of ways for people to creatively shop for Father's Day at epicstyle.com. Been fun talking to you about dads and their drinks. I appreciate that. You don't have any kids, right?
No.
So you're not going to get any gifts, right?
Sadly, no, unless I get myself a son.
Would you be willing to adopt me?
What?
Yeah, I'm serious, and I'll get you something.
That's nice.
And I won't buy it at epicstyle.com, just because, you know, you already have that.
Well, thank you.
Matt Dubow, epicstyle.com. So appreciate you being on Grape Encounters and the huge contribution that you make to this show every week. We love you very much. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters Radio, but that will never do it for Matt Dubow, because there's always something new right around the corner. Huh, Matt?
Always.